Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Random Curiosity Anime Podcast. I'm your host, Stilts, and today we have a very special guest. No, we actually really do have a special guest for once. This marks the first podcast for our newest and lowliest writer, Passerby. So with that in mind, let's get with the introductions. As usual, we'll give our names, the shows we're blogging this season, and an interesting fact about ourselves. So I'll go
first. We're doing that fact thing again? Damn it.
Yes, we're always doing the interesting fact thing. Come on, get with the program here.
You suck.
You have 30 seconds. So, like I said, I'll go first. Once again, I'm your host, Stilts, and this season I'm blogging Gekken Shoujo Nozaki-kun, a little help from Zenibus, Prism Ilya, and Tokyo ESP. As for my interesting fact, I own a giant stuffed penguin that wears a sombrero and is sitting behind me right now, staring.
You filled it with beer, didn't you?
I might have. I might be going to get some beer from the penguin. So next we have our new Kohai and a podcast virgin, Passerby.
Is that what I'm going to be known as throughout this entire cast?
Yes, you are.
And for longer, too.
Great, super. Well, I'm Passerby. Just this season I'm blogging Persona 4, the Golden Animation, and eventually Hanamono Gatari, which has just aired and I haven't watched now. Get there.
Yeah, you should. You'll have fun with that.
If it's anything like the last season with those, I hope you like fan service. But and finally, we have the guy who just earned the right to be called Sensei, Zephyr Sensei.
Oh, yeah, actually, now that you mentioned. Yeah. Hey, it's Zephyr. I'm covering Zankyo no Terra and Out No Zero of Enzo this season. Interesting fact. I'll just say I watch too many damn shows, but
that's not interesting
at all. But I what the. Man, I hate this thing. Bullshit.
I gave you the perfect... Why can you be called Sensei now?
That's not interesting.
Well, it's kind of interesting.
All right, I'll just say that. I have realized that I have watched more shows in three seasons now than I did all year last year. What's that?
Sure, we'll go with that. did we get one for you, Passerby?
Oh, dear. I consider myself a painfully uninteresting person. But in case anyone didn't know, I'm Australian. And so let me say something interesting about Australia. And by which I mean a public service announcement, but I think that I owe the world this. And Australians do as a whole. Because Australians joke about how deadly Australia is all the time. And an American tourist comes over and is like, okay, joke about the drop bears. Ah ha ha. Very good. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. In all seriousness, Australia is a death trap. You will die. Do not underestimate it. Do not touch anything. Always wear shoes. Do not stand in trees. That's all.
Isn't there that spider that like hides in toilet bowls? And like... Bites you in the ass.
There's more than one kind of spider which hides in toilet bowls.
There's more than one. Okay. There we go.
Oh, man. I'm torn between never wanting to go there and wanting to go there immediately. But,
it's a great place. You just die.
Yeah, well, everybody does. At least you do it with a screaming agony. Not sure what my point was. Anyway, so since this is our second podcast of the summer season, this time we're going to probably actually talk about some shows, which we realized we didn't really do last time. So that'll be fun. We're going to start out by talking about 3 to 4 shows, and then we might have some random topics on the end, or we'll tangent off into something else, or we'll shoot Zephyr because he says something ridiculous and it'll all dissolve into chaos. We'll see how it goes. So, first of all, let's start off. Passerby, are there any shows you would like to talk about?
Several. I'd like to start with something less serious. Something irked me about Zankyo no Terra this week. I just wanted to rant about it. That's all.
Okay,
that's basically it. Like, Zankyo no Terra has so far been a great show, not just because like it's written well and everything, but Zankyo no Terra, the attention to detail and the way it's researched, you don't see it much in anime, especially the research. Research and anime doesn't always go hand in hand, I know. But the thing is, this week, in Zankyo no Terra, they featured a chess game. And there seems to be a cardinal rule, especially in anime, that when you show a chess game, it must be completely wrong. It's not the writer's fault this time, because like the moves they say are correct, but it doesn't match the moves on the board.
Yeah, right? I was wondering about that. I was staring at the board, and I was like, there's something off here. And it was actually off, so...
It's completely off. For one, the queen and king are swapped around, so they're in the wrong place. So you have no idea what they're actually playing. And so it's... Five says d4, but she actually plays e4. But she may have meant to play d4 because her queen and her king are swapped around. So you don't actually know what they're playing. which irks me because this default into knight f6 is a legit opening. It's like it could be an Indian variation. It's legit, right? And you think, oh yeah, the writers, they researched this, right? That's great. But then the way it's animated just makes you doubts about whether these moves are intentional or if they just accidentally played something correctly. that's the only complaint I have about Zenko Terror. Literally the only complaint I have about it. Otherwise, great show. Love it. One complaint.
Yeah, we apparently just really classed up our podcast for many reasons. But no, that reminds me of No Game, No Life. Yeah, they did the same thing, apparently. I mean, I don't play chess, so I didn't notice. But everybody's like, oh, it's all she already would have lost or something. I was like, oh, well, that's pretty bad. I would think that's something you could look up, but... Hey.
Yeah, apparently shit went down on that, but I mean, at least that one had more of an explanation, because you could kind of throw it down as that she intentionally didn't care for the rule to let her win. But yeah. I mean, in this case, it's actually a big difference because the intent there was not the same as what actually ended up getting animated. So it's a much bigger deal here than it was there.
No, but what do you guys think of the show overall? Wait, are you blogging this, Zephyr?
Yes, I am.
So I'll probably know what you think about it then, if I apparently read your posts. I'm behind on everything. But I'm really enjoying it as a sort of, the Death Note style, I would say killing game, but they're actually not killing a lot of people.
Yeah. You're going to piss off a lot of people with that comment, by the way.
Yeah, probably.
It's not Death Note, damn it! No.
It's not, but it's still got the same kind of mental...
It's got, some similar feel to it, definitely.
Yeah.
I can understand why people compare it to Death Note, but the one thing I always why aren't people comparing it more to Vivo Vendetta?
Mm. Am I
from the wrong generation?
No, it's not bad.
No, it's actually I did remember someone in the comments pointing it out a few times before. Was that you? Well, anyway, but I don't know. The big thing is merely it's just because it's more of anime, so people watch anime, they think of anime, and the Western movies get left out. Either that, or for some reason, the guys watching the show here in RC haven't watched the movie before or something. But it's definitely a good comparison.
It does have it's potentially, and I don't know, I'm behind on episodes, so I don't actually know if they've said it yet or if we have found out at all what their goal is. But if you compare, like, of course, Death Note, White's a monster. He just wants to do his crazy crap. Whereas in V for Vendetta, it's actually, I mean, the main character is a terrorist, and he kills people, but he seems to have an altruistic reason, or at least an interesting reason for why he's doing it. And I don't know if the main characters in Zenkyo no Terror have an altruistic reason, but it's whatever it is, it's probably more interesting than I want to kill all the bad people, and I think this is going to work out somehow. So...
I would hope it works out. It's halfway through now. They haven't actually talked about their goals per se, but they've been hinting about it.
Yeah, I've got a pretty good idea, but
especially in the later episode, or the latest episodes, I suppose, with Zenko no Terra, you don't see it much in the starting episodes, but you definitely see a similar theme to Vivo Vendetta, which is the state, or I suppose the government, the state not caring much about its people. You basically see the state willing to sacrifice its citizens for its goals. In this case, to catch the terrorists, I suppose. But it's there are hints of corruption, I suppose. In Vivo Vendetta, it was about a fight against the authoritarian states. V is an anarchist and all that jazz.
Yeah.
And there wasn't much of that in the beginning, but the police seemed to be all sorts, mostly upstanding guys and all that jazz. But you see it in the later episodes of Zenkyo no Terror, especially now that Americans have gotten involved. I don't know what commentary they're trying to make about America. I'm not American, so I leave that hanging.
I was mostly, in the one episode I saw that, I was like, okay, so that English isn't horrible. Of course he's blonde. I'll let that pass. Is that girl supposed to be American? Because I have never met an American that wears thigh-high stockings.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's actually from Japan before.
Yeah, she's from...
She got moved over to America, which is why... I mean, I understand when she talks, she does have the English, and it's not genuine English. I mean, you're an episode behind, so you haven't seen this yet, but you'll notice next episode that the FBI agent is the only one with actual English speaker behind him. So that kind of bothered me a little bit as well. But I mean, it wasn't too big of a deal, but it was surprising that they put one guy with actual English and then the other 16 guys in the car that are also FBI agents. Suddenly it's all English. And
yeah,
it kind of, yeah, maybe go.
It's like, what was that show with all the blonde girls? They're supposed to be British.
Very specific, man.
Yeah, Kinero's Mosaic?
Mosaic, yes.
That one was actually a pretty good example because they made an attempt to actually teach the Japanese Seiyu respectable English. And I was like, holy shit. But most of the time, it's just atrocious. I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to write that
off. I think they try to teach the voice actor of Five English as well. But the problem is English seems to be very hard for her, so she can't speak English and act at the same time.
Yeah.
And so it comes out odd.
Yeah, but I mean, at least for her, it's okay. I mean, it's obvious she's a Japanese citizen, so I mean, if it works. But you know, you're working with like 16 FBI guys, and they can't speak English. Makes me kind of go, whatever. But,
it brings me what you were mentioning earlier, Passerby, reminding me of a thought. So we're getting more and more fiction about terrorists. I wonder why, but
I wonder why.
Yeah, but there's a interesting line between terrorist and freedom fighter. So V for Vendetta has a really good one because you can think he's either way or he's both, you know, but it really, whether somebody is a terrorist or a freedom fighter depends on your position in a fight. Cause a lot of times they do the same things and usually they involve bombs.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point in terms, it's a lot about perspective in the show in general. It seems like one of the things that Watanabe wants to do is paint Sphinx as kind of the, not so much terrorist, but terrorist with noble intent, per se. It seems to be hinting to that. We don't know exactly what their actual goal is, but they've definitely tried to paint them as kind of, quote, the good guys. But then as you sit there and you realize they're still terrorists, and the stuff they're doing isn't particularly correct, and so, you know, there's definitely that perspective divide in terms of how you feel about them in general. And I remember some of the guys in the comments especially were like, you know what, I'm not buying the whole good terrorist act and so on and so forth. So
yeah, and it's also, it becomes cloudier since we know them.
Yeah, as well. You see them from their perspective rather than...
Yeah, you don't ever get that picture from terrorists. It's usually they're monsters and they should be droned. It's another reason people tend to paint Americans as interfering jackasses in fiction, probably deservedly. But what do you guys, one more thing on this, what do you guys think about the fact that they won't or very much do not want to kill?
I'm kind of torn on that myself.
I think they're not the typical terrorists in that the destruction itself is not the point. There's been a few comparisons, especially about a place in the show, about 9 and 12 being children and just playing games. And basically, like children, 9 and 12, what basically 9 and 12 want is that they want attention. They want attention to some very specific serious issue. But in the end, this is all just a cry for attention. And therefore, killing lots of people is not the point. And I think it's important for them to not kill anyone so far because, as has been mentioned, there is an intent to paint them as more noble and having a goal. And therefore, they must have rules because they have a goal and it's not exactly a gain for them as contrasted by Five. Therefore, they must have rules. And one of the easiest and most fundamental rules is thou shalt not kill. So having that in place separates them from Five, who it's basically, this is a game, I don't care, people die.
Yeah, everyone can be killed as long as we get you for fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good point to make, but I mean, the big thing for me is, like, while I understand the symbolic meaning behind them not wanting to kill anyone and actually succeeding in not killing anyone so far, it's one of those things that kind of requires a little bit of suspension of disbelief a little bit, because I mean, you're doing all this stuff, you're blowing stuff up, setting traps, setting bombs, and you know, stuff happens.
The one thing I always think of is it's reasonable that this would happen. It's the odds aren't great, but it's reasonable. And yeah. I always think of why we're listening to this story. I mean, the people in stories are usually outstanding for one reason or another. And that's why we're listening to the stories be told about them. It's not the jackasses that screw up half the time and shit just happens. It's not truly likely, but it's not so far out of the realm that I'm like, eh. It takes a little adjustment though, yeah.
Yeah. And I think overall with this show, one of the big things that I really like in particular is how Watanabe's not really scared to really reference certain events from the past that you would think would have a lot of stigma, a lot of controversy. You know, there's the obvious 9/11 links. The bomb attack really kind of brings back the sarin gas attacks as well. And, you know, I feel like he should be applauded for really approaching this issue, referencing it. And, I mean, I guess treating it with respect in ways. Like, he's using it as a key part of the story, and he's not making light of it in any shape or form. And I don't know. It's nice to see that in ways that there hasn't been much controversy from what I've seen. So that's definitely.
But
been
I don't
a plus
think
me.
I think that's something that people think would be controversial. But when I look at it, I'm like, so. I mean, it happened. You can make stories about it. It's like the whole for the longest time they wouldn't show nukes in Japan because. But, I mean, then they've started referencing them a few more times. Now this, No Game, No Life, actually had one, too.
Yeah.
People don't freak out about that as much, and especially since it's a generation that hasn't had some of those problems. But
I think we should freak out a bit more about nukes. That's one of the things I think about at night in my bed. We can kill each other.
You're going to get nuked?
Completely.
Have better things. I mean, if you think about it.
Humankind have the capacity to utterly destroy each other right now. And What a thought.
No, but it's less likely because we haven't gotten to the brink like we did during the Cold War. It's like when everybody says the whole world's going to hell. It's not. I mean, the World War II was atrocious. And then there were times during the Cold War we were all about to die. And somebody fumbled the keys or decided, no, I'm not going to be the one that lights the whole world on fire. And then we all lived. We're nowhere near that. Worst we're going to get is a dirty bomb somewhere from some, terrorist. But before this gets too real, one last thought, and then we'll move on to the next show. I actually kind of think it's interesting that, depending on how you define terrorist, they're not ones. Because the point of a terrorist attack is in the name.
It's to incite fear.
It's to incite terror. So, of course, if you don't want the terrorist effect, attacked work, you just don't get freaked out and they have no power. But their whole point is not to spread terror. They're, bombers, undoubtedly, criminals as well, but they're not trying to spread terror. That's not the point. They're trying to get something across. So it's a little more complex.
It's not quite there. Yeah, it's not all black and white.
Yeah. But
on my part, if I'm not interrupting anything.
No, go ahead.
I'd say that the thing is, as far as I'm concerned, from my perspective, 9 and 12 are definitely terrorists. But my view of terrorists are a bit different from the modern view of terrorists, because we're very used to the modern jihadi, death to America kind of terrorists, and they blow up tall towers to kind of attack the enemy directly and all that. But traditionally speaking, as you've noted before, Stutz, depending on who you ask, a terrorist and freedom fighter are not all that much difference. And in the end, a lot of what a terrorist does, like blowing stuff up and killing people even, is about drawing attention to their cause. And certainly, we also see in Zankyo no Terror, the governments, at least, treats 9 and 12 very much like terrorists, and they even combat them like terrorists in a way. Because traditionally, allowing me to use my degree here for just a second, is that the way you fight terrorists and guerrillas and freedom fighters, I suppose, is with brutality. You have to kill a lot of your own people. Because terrorists tend to hide in populations and everything and use local networks to supply themselves. So the state to fight terrorists always has to kill a lot of its own people, or just kill a lot of people in general. And we see that kind of emerging with the way 5 is willing to handle 9 and 12. It's just willing to sacrifice a lot of population to flush out terrorists. And so as far as I'm concerned, 9 and 12 being treated, even if they aren't the kind of terrorists we're used to, they've been treated like terrorists. That's I don't actually have a point here. I just wanted to rant. Yeah.
Okay. No, that makes sense. I mean, it's also the fact that terrorist and guerrilla have been conflated into the same term. But we're getting pedantic, and that's a pain in the ass. So let's move on to the next show.
Can I ask one more question, though? Because you brought up a good point, because the whole flushing out of 9 and 12, especially in with the subway bombing and this week's episode with the airport. See, my question is that, is she actually flushing them out or not? Because it feels like to me that, especially with the subway bombing, you knew that 9 and 12 were going to be there at that subway car at some point. So the question is, I mean, why didn't they bother catching them there in the first place? And again, with the airport, they're on camera, there's guards around. Why isn't she actually sending people to capture Sphinx in the first place?
Because the game is over then?
Yeah, it's possible the game is over, but at the same time, it's interesting to wonder what exactly the goal is of the guys behind Five to actually give her this leeway to play that game in the first place.
I suppose. For this game, what's the win condition? I'm still not actually sure.
Yeah.
It's probably not to find 9 and 12 since he already has. So what's the win condition for the game on both sides? I don't know what 9 and 12 wants to do to win. I don't know what Five wants to do to win. So, yeah.
Just an interesting, it's a interesting question to ponder, because definitely it looks like they could have been caught already, but at the same time, they're being kind of left to their own devices in some way. And, you know, I hope it all works out in the end in terms of the kind of results that we get. But part of me has me questioning it as well these past few episodes.
Well, I would draw on some Pratchett and mention it also has the, if you're at the mercy of somebody, you always want it to be an evil man because they're going to toy with you. Whereas a good man will cut you down where you stand. They might just be lucky that Five ain't so nice because she's playing with them and giving them a chance.
Yeah, possibly.
But okay, so let's really go on to the next show now. Stilts, what do you want to talk about? Thank you, Stilts. I want to talk about Sword Art Online.
That was awkward. Oh, no. Yeah. Why would you want to do that?
Because I know that you're going to hate this, but...
Stilts.
I'll actually start off.
Off.
Hey, none of that. I'm actually enjoying this season.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you watched the last episode? The previous episode?
No. Well, I watched the last one. Yeah, I watched the last one. That one wasn't that good. But
PTSD episode.
Yeah. Well, that one had some interesting things, but some of it was kind of dumb. But I'll tell you why I'm enjoying it. It's because I figured out why I didn't enjoy the first season. Part of it was the second core, which was Chip. But the biggest thing was it wasn't Log Horizon. Whenever I went into it at first, I wanted Log Horizon, and then it was Sword Online, which is just a fantasy, like a knight in shining armor, yada yada story, and it wasn't what I wanted, and I'm like, well, this is shit. At this point, now I've seen Log Horizon, I've gotten the show I wanted, and it was great, and now I'm going back to Sword Online, I'm like, well, it's not ever going to be great to me, because it is not an MMO story, and it just kind of pinches off some of what it likes there, and it does other things that just wouldn't happen in an MMO, but... the action's pretty good. It has some decent, you know, dialogue at some times, and it's most of the time, well, then it doesn't get too serious and PTSD. It's just kind of fun to watch. So I'm enjoying it enough.
Wait, you said before that you're watching Sword Online and it was not Log Horizon?
Yeah.
Do you mean that you didn't like the first Sword Art Online because it wasn't... because Log Horizon came afterwards. So.
Yeah, when I didn't know about Log Horizon then, but when I went in, I wanted something like Log Horizon.
Something like, okay.
I wanted an MMO anime. That's what I wanted. And I wanted one where, as an MMO player, I showed Log Horizon to one of my friends who does not watch anime. And he loved it and watched all of it because we used to play MMOs together. And it was like, okay, I understand this. It's got a little anime to it. It's got a little Japanese stuff that he doesn't really get. But it's an MMO show. So he was able to go through the entire thing and enjoy it. That was what I was looking for with Sword Online. And it wasn't that. It's not an MMO show. It's just a fantasy show. But as that, it's okay. Thoughts? Okay.
Well, for me, you know, it's pretty well documented how much I disliked the first season of Sword Online. So much so that, you know, the second arc, I just abandoned it midway. Pretty much it's the only show that I've abandoned at that level into the show. But, you know, I put that all aside. I sit there and I went into the second season. I figured, you know what, might as well. It's a new season. I've heard good things about Sinon and in general the arc. So I figured, you know, especially since I watched Maho Senso and I got mad pissed at that, there's no way there's no way, you know, even however much I dislike SLL, that it'll be worse than that. So, you know, I gave it a try, and, you know, contrary to my expectations, the first few episodes were actually quite enjoyable. I'll admit that I actually quite liked how things were going and being developed, just in terms of, you know, action, animation, as usual. But, you know, for me, the last few episodes haven't been that great as a result. And, you know, it's kind of dropped for me pretty fast afterwards. And, you know, it's gone back to being that show where I'll just peek at from time to time. But especially the first few episodes really made it to me because, you know, it's a new character. And really, she's presented fairly well. And she kicks some ass, which helps. And it all changed by adding Kirito back in, to be honest. you know, the second he comes in, he starts chopping down shit and doing stuff an overpowered character does. And, you know, that really threw it back down to the dumps for me, personally. I still think it is at least better than the first season of Sora Online. But, you know, it still reeks of the hallmark poor writing that I like to say about it, in terms of character development and really integrating Kirito in the story. For the most part, who he is really breaks a lot of the enjoyment I would get from the story itself separately.
And yeah,
especially
the only thing
PTSD one. So.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I think of is just, well, what Divine mentioned to me is just a fantasy story. And I think of, like, what was that show you blogged, Aesthetica?
Oh, Hagure Yusha no Aesthetica.
That's the one. Like, the main character in that's hyper overpowered.
Yes,
and admittedly,
yes.
Part of the point of that show is for him to do terrible, gropey things to women,
yeah.
Which Kirito doesn't do, thankfully. But,
yeah.
I mean, I think of that, he was overpowered as shit, and that wasn't a great show, but people pretty much accepted it.
Yeah.
It's harder to accept it in a game, but once you just kind of write all those off as this is just a fantasy story in MMO drag. It's easier to swallow.
Yeah, I mean, it's acceptable to an extent, but I mean, especially with stuff like the recent episode, the stuff with the PTSD kind of irked me a lot because that whole run where he fought with the coffins and stuff, like, it wasn't actually shown in the first season, was it? Like,
no.
Last I remembered, it was not actually shown.
There was that one guy,
but that's it. And, you know, he was not all bent out of shape after that one, okay? And then to bring this big event up and make it look like he has some kind of huge problem, it just didn't work for me. It didn't really make much sense in the context, and it really annoyed me because then he used that whole PTSD weakness moment to go get Sinon all sympathetic about him, and, you know, it wasn't proper development the way I saw it, and it really dumbed down her character as well. And, you know, it's just a pity because she could have been a good character, but I feel like she's getting hampered by Kirito pretty much.
It wasn't foreshadowed really well. So what do you think, Passerby?
I'm gonna come in and just be in the middle, I suppose. I'm conflicted about Sword Art Online. Because
you mean in general or this season Sora Online?
In general, I suppose, but especially this season because in the first season of Sora Online, and I actually watched both courts. Okay. I like everyone else here. I didn't enjoy the second one as much as the first, and I didn't enjoy the second one at all, as to say. And yeah, I didn't. And I also went into the second season, which is this season, with higher expectations because I also heard some good things. And I've got friends who really enjoy Sword Online for some reason, and they really wanted me to watch it. And for a while, I thought it was actually pretty good. But then, as the later episodes came, I started thinking to myself, there's something wrong when I'm watching a show and the protagonist seems to be in a bind, but I'm rooting for the protagonist to get shot in the face. I get that too,
but I know that'll never happen.
What does that say about my enjoyment of the show if I'm actually rooting for the protagonist to get shot in the face? Actually in the face. If in that scene Kirito was shot and he lost just like that with no fanfare, I would have forgiven Sword Art Online everything.
Yeah, I would say
on
that.
The spot.
Definitely, yeah.
But
the big thing is weakness is actually attractive in a character. I mean, that humanizes them. And when they don't have weakness, they either need to be so over-the-top invincible that it's just about watching, you know, behemoths clash, or we're probably not going to care that much.
Yeah. No, and that's the problem, you know? The PTSD arc, it was like it made him have a weakness that he didn't actually have.
My main gripe, I suppose, though, isn't necessarily about Kirito being overpowered, because I still have to point out that there are plenty of fiction and anime where right. The main protagonist is overpowered, and sometimes we're more forgiving of them than others. But the thing is, especially in the second season, I'm just not sure what the point of Kirito is. Why does he exist? Because the story could have gone on perfectly well if he does not show up at all and Sinon was just the main protagonist.
Yeah,
and
she dealt that too.
Her thing.
Definitely.
She dealt with, if she dealt her thing, if she deals with Death Gun as well, because that would fit with her thing. If she dealt with her thing and she meets Death Gun, there's the whole thing about people being killed for reals, okay, and she deals with that. And Kirito does not need to exist at all. She has her issues, she has her trauma and everything. And we don't need Kirito to also come in and say, oh, I also have trauma.
When he doesn't.
He has trauma in hindsight. It's like retcon trauma. I now have trauma. I'm not sure what, and he doesn't need to have this trauma. I know that having weakness is good for a character, but he doesn't need to have exactly the same kind of thing as Sinon as well. But Sinon's already the character who has trauma and she's compelling like that. Kirito is basically just parroting her act. In fact, Kirito is upstaging Sinon by saying, oh, my trauma is kind of bigger deal. Look at me break down. And Sinon has sympathized that. Even when it comes to weaknesses, he upstages other characters. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's a good point, because he could work. Like, the one thing he really brings is that he knows about Death Gun, where she doesn't seem to have a clue. So there's that little thing. But it could work if he wasn't there, or if it was really a Sinon arc, as in she was the main character and Kirito is the secondary character to her.
Yeah.
If he was just a cameo appearance, I would be fine with that as well. That could mean, just have your Kirito. If you really love Kirito much, here, Kirito appearance, cameo. Great. Super.
Yeah, but those first few episodes were great for me, because all he did was a few seconds of a quick show here and there, and that's it. Like, he was doing stuff in the background, but it wasn't explicitly focused on him, you know?
I have a question. What do you guys think about Trap Kirito?
Oh, that annoys me a lot.
Why is that?
No, it kind of feels like the author, remember, he did Axel World too, right? And, you know, people were all up in arms because the main character was, well, majorly different from the rest of the cast.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here and, you know, that's another part of what annoys me about his works. Like, Sword Art Online, my dislike of it isn't so much Kirito as it is how he's written and how the circumstances are written around his character. And, you know, it feels like this is just one of those things where he writes in a character who he just makes different for the sake of being different. And especially in, like, the Trap Kirito case, they put him there and it's just, why do you need to do that? Like, it wasn't necessary to have him as that female in the first, like, looking like a female in the first place. And it annoys me because it feels like he's only using it so that, hey, he can get along with Sinon better early on because she thinks that he's a she, and so on and so forth. And they could add in all those scenes at the beginning.
That's a good point. It's transparently for the ease of telling the story, as opposed to it naturally flows from what might happen.
Yeah, the PTSD is just the same thing as well. It's not naturally flowing. It's used for him to get an in to Sinon's sympathy and
that's,
all that
I think,
fun
is
stuff.
A different thing. Like, the gender confusion thing is used so we can get close to Sinon. The reason for it being there is clear. The PTSD thing is so he can upstage, and that's a little different. But that's
the sad part is he doesn't need to upstage. Like, you know, like, you can do the PTSD and not upstage, but at the same time, like, I mean, if you're going to retcon it, it's a bit late.
Yeah, you need to do that way before, so it's not a retcon. But, Passerby, what do you think?
On my part, I also wasn't exactly sure why Kirito looked the way he did at the start. But as it went on, I thought, this is a good opportunity. Especially since I didn't know that Kirito was supposed to be a trap and not straight-out female. I just saw him in the opening and go, oh, suddenly, yeah, female Kirito. I thought it was a missed opportunity to explore one of the issues of MMOs is that, you know, males playing as female avatars, and sometimes even the other way around. Because as a gamer, and I've been a gamer for a very long time, traditionally, there are no women on the internet. And basically, all women you meet are men masquerading as women or FBI agents. And
That's true. And
I thought that would have been a great issue to explore. It was touched on very, very, very slightly.
In the first season. Yes. Way back in the first season, yeah. The whole exposure thing. That was good.
This kind of thing I think is worth talking about in gaming, especially since even today, where we're much more open about things and we're much more accepting, female gamers still get more or less a short stick.
Yeah, and there's definitely that stigma.
And even some females feel like they need to disguise themselves as males because they wouldn't want to be seen as females, whereas other males think they should disguise themselves as females to try and gain some kind of advantage over, you know, their fellow males. And I thought that would have been something to talk about, but then that never happened, and I was a bit disappointed about it.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's the same thing as I was saying earlier. I mean, now that actually, there is a character in, well, of course, Akatsuki in Log Horizon had a male avatar and then had to change because she was way too tall for a real body. But and I've also heard that there are other ones that didn't get much time in the anime. So, but that was an MMO story. This is still not. I mean, the whole idea that you can't have a different gender than your natural one unless it just makes you look like it, but you're still male or female, is not how any MMO ever would be designed. Why? There's no point. I mean, the escapism is part of it. You want to let people be whatever the hell they want. That would never happen. But that's because it's not an MMO anime. It's a fantasy MMO or a fantasy anime with MMO trappings.
The thing is, though, I think you go first.
No, that would have been more interesting. I will say that. But go ahead.
Yeah. No, go.
Me first. You first. Me first.
Yeah.
You pass it back.
Okay,
yeah.
Me first. Okay. The thing is, though, Sora Online teases that kind of MMO story. It does mention a lot of issues in MMOs, which could have been significant and could have been talked about a bit more. For example, in the latest arc, they talked about how... What's this game called? Gun Art Online? Whatever.
Gun Gale
uses a virtual currency, which treads on legal gray lines and legal gray areas. And talks about legal currency and transactions within MMOs and MMO economies and stuff like that. And does try to make you remember that this is an MMO and there's real life game issues and there's issues about the internet which the society hasn't thought about yet. And hints all these things, but then it never gets really deep into it, is the thing. It could be an MMO story. It has half of an MMO story. It has the trappings of an MMO story, but it never goes far enough with a lot of things, I feel.
Yeah, I feel like I should note that I'm not excusing the story for that. It is a failing that it puts on an MMO skin and doesn't follow through. And that's why it will never be great to me, because its central conceit is a lie to me. But what I do is, it's like, I don't worry about nuclear bombs going off. This one, it's not an MMO story. I just stop worrying about it. I mentally correct for it, and it becomes something I can enjoy. But I can never love, because it's still, at its base, it's lying to me.
Yeah.
But any more thoughts on SAO?
Yeah,
Talk about the lightsabers?
Well, the lightsaber, the copyright infringement on that is high.
They never call it a lightsaber. Probably in... open domain by this point anyway.
See, that was another thing though. That was like
you can't copyright an idea.
Yeah.
You can't copyright.
Oh yeah, you
the
can.
Idea of a lightsaber no, can be
the
used.
The sound
anyway.
Effects were pretty much identical too. So.
No, but those I'm pretty sure they're what that one those. Pack that anybody can just use stuff from.
Possibly. No, but I mean that just boils down to him putting Kirito on another pedestal. The guy here, let's have a guy who has lightsabers. He can cut down bullets in a gun game.
That doesn't make sense. The lightsaber or beams or whatever the fuck I'm calling it doesn't bother me. The him knocking down bullets doesn't make a damn bit of sense without the mystical force. But whatever, I just started laughing at that point.
What bothered me was that in general and in anime especially, guns just get no respect. I'm not American. I'm not gun nuts. But in general, guns get no respect in anime. And I was thinking, oh, at last, they're going to just have guns. And hey, it'd be lots of gunfire. And guns would get the kind of level of respect it may deserve as a utensil of killing. But then in comes Kirito, and no, guns are still kind of crap. And breaks out a sword, and brings a sword to a gunfight, and he wins with it. So it was like, there goes that. So Sword Online has, I suppose for me, has been a story of fair promises, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, I kind of
up to poor writing on my...
Well, yeah, but I kind of understand. I understand the gun thing. It's the same way you don't see stories about modern jet fighters, but you see them about, like, Koyuta, when you have the ones that actually go in dogfight. Because a dogfight is interesting. A sword fight is interesting. Battleships fighting, interesting. People shooting each other, it can be, but not as much. Firing missiles at each other from a long way away from a modern jet, not at all interesting. You know, battleships were cool, but aircraft carriers really aren't.
No, now that you mention it, though, like, it's funny because you sit there in the first two episodes of Sinon fighting only with her sniper rifle, and, you know, that was fun to watch. It was really great, and then, you know, two episodes later, let's use my sword and kick her ass.
Yeah. Now, and, guns are better than the other two examples I get. They can still be interesting, but
you know,
there's a certain romanticism about swords. And
lightsabers, I mean, especially.
Lightsabers are great. I love lightsabers.
Use the force, Luke.
But anyway, we've gone on this one for a little bit. Let's go to the next one. Zephyr, what do you want to talk about?
Let's see. Well, I'm watching like 25,000 shows, so personally,
there's one that we might all be watching. Come on.
Yeah, there are a couple shows that I wanted to talk about. M3 was one of them, but I don't think any of you are watching that right now. So guess I'll pick the other popular choice, and it'll be Out Noah Zero.
Woo!
And
go start.
Yeah, so for me, Out Noah Zero has been it's one of those kind of fun mecha action combat kind of shows. And, you know, the story's not particularly top-notch per se, but, you know, I feel like for me it's one of those shows that is particularly entertaining to watch, regardless. Especially the soundtrack from Sawano Hiroyuki especially makes it worthwhile to watch just for that in particular. The animation rubs some people the wrong way in CG, but, I mean, it's pretty top-notch in kind of like what Enzo's words, it's like a Hollywood flick in many ways, popcorn film. And, you know, for me, the big thing I wanted to get was your impressions of it. Because, you know, obviously I'm covering the show, so my pulse are there. My views are there. So I kind of feel like asking, what do you guys? Yeah.
I agree entirely that Out Noah Zero is a Hollywood movie. In more ways than one. It's entirely a Hollywood movie. It's basic. It's an alien invasion story. It's like, when I watched Out Noah Zero, the first thing I thought of, oh, hey, Independence Day. And the second thing I thought of was, hey, this is BattleTech, the anime. And the third thing I thought of was Shingeki no Kyojin. And that's the third thing I thought of. The third, only when it came to my third thought was it anime. And basically, it's a very Western kind of thing. Alien invasion movie, very Western. Concentrated on one country fighting the aliens, very Western. And basically, its main characters also in a way Western. By the way, the fourth thing I thought was Signs, because all the aliens are strangely weak to water. But in any case. You have a main character in Japan, at least. I think having a main character like Inaho is a bit odd, because Inaho is more of the kind of character you find in a Western Hollywood flick, in an alien invasion movie.
He's a John Wayne kind.
Yeah, basically, pretty much. And every other character is basically, especially the mooks, especially all the other soldiers. I feel sorry for them. The only reason for their existence is to gape at the aliens, get their asses kicked, and then make us realize these aliens are really powerful. In the same way, you know, that it's the biplanes in King Kong, or, you know, the jet fighters in Independence Day. That's all they're good for. They're here to really destroy. And that's interesting, since we just talked about Sword Art Online and having Kirito as the overpowered main character. Here we have Inaho, basically, as the overpowered main character. Not in that he's like got superpowers, but in that he's the only person who's allowed to do anything significant. He's the only guy who's allowed to defeat the enemy.
True.
He's the only guy who's allowed to use his head. And he's
that's
the only
true,
guy.
I agree. But, yeah. I mean, okay, the mooks getting killed, that's, yeah, it's, yeah, I'm so used to seeing it that I hardly registered. Now, Inaho he's interesting in that his overpoweredness, such that it is, doesn't come from some, you know, inborn talent or something that somebody gave him. He's using his head. Now, it would be nice if somebody else would use their head too. Like, I would like to see it a throwaway line that says, yeah, the one that dropped on New Orleans, by the way, that's shitty, that place gets enough trouble as is.
I remember you were like, you were watching the first episode, like, shit, New Orleans again?
Yeah, they're getting no respect or luck or to not be destroyed periodically. But anyway, I would love to hear a throwaway line that says, you know, they were getting attacked and they took out one of those super mech badasses or
yeah,
something
right?
Like
some
that.
Other group out of yeah. all the 50,000 battalions would have at least taken down one freaking Martian cataphract, right?
Yeah, and maybe they have, and we just haven't heard about
no,
it.
No, actually, they confirmed that only...
Oh, okay.
The most that's recent awesome. Episode confirmed that only two were destroyed.
That's awesome. Yeah, I would like to see more depth in that than just, you know, like if he's got two and there are two other dead in the rest of the world, well, he's a badass, but at least somebody else is using their head. But when he's the only one doing it, it strains a little bit. But it's interesting enough to watch at the time that I'm like, okay, how is he going to do this?
Yeah, how's he going to kick this guy's ass?
Yeah.
The tactics. Yeah, and the fun part is that he actually uses... explanations that, you know, are essentially based on real life. What was it, like the Leidenfrost effect and all that stuff is actually actual science. It's not exactly implemented in the same way that you have here. I mean, but, you know, the base effect and explanation do make sense. So
yeah, the way you get it is science magic bullshit. Like the first mech, it's all...
If the first mech cannot see out of his own force field, how do people see it?
Yeah, there was that, but there was something about the
field. Come on, guys.
Deployed right. in an opposite
that's true.
Way. Sure.
Maybe it's...
But,
okay, maybe it's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, that was but... a complicated explanation, but people were like, there was something, I forgot what it was, but there was a decent explanation for potentially being able to see it, but I forgot what it was. But something about deploying an extra field to counter something, but long story.
Why would they want to do? Well, anyway, so it's not perfect, but when you're doing weird crap yeah. like that, if you get close, I'll give it to you.
It was some explanation. Basically, he needed to see, so...
Well, it also had... Oh, sorry, Zumbra's mentioning how could it communicate with the cameras. Well, they had the...
they had that small spot, which...
Yeah, that made sense. That was how, you know, managed to kill it.
Yeah. That small spot made sense in terms of how it transmitted to the camera, but the rest of the stuff was slightly... I mean, you can chalk it up to Ad Noah hijinks. So.
Yeah, if you're getting close and that kind of thing, I'm willing to give you points. That's
fine
that's
with awesome. This kind of show, yeah.
But other thoughts? I think I interrupted you, Passerby, if you were still going.
Oh, no. That sounded critical, but basically I enjoy Ad Noah Zero. As it mentioned, the soundtrack's really good. The soundtrack carries the scenes, basically.
It really does. Have you watched the recent episode? Today's
I've
episode?
Watched up to, I haven't watched 2 days. I've watched up to 6, I think.
Dude, today's soundtrack, wow. Okay. They added like 2 new songs as well, and it was like...
Need to get
actually, it's kind of like whenever I would watch Kyokaisen or something like that. Something where I, who almost never notice the soundtrack, I actually do notice it. And it's because it's a little more forceful.
It's there. It's oomph.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it's really like I mean I remember some of the Kyokaisen names like Save Me From Anything because it was really strong and it wasn't background music, it was really forceful. But it like in Ad Noah Zero really tends to enhance the scene. So I'm like, fuck yeah.
Well, I think it's by design because Ad Noah Zero the music is designed to carry the scenes because Ad Noah Zero is basically melodrama.
That's true.
As in literally it's melodrama. And it's intended to be melodrama. It does it fairly well. So the music is intended to carry big scenes and to give a sense of drama. Whereas in other shows, music may be more of just an enhancement for, you know, just supposed to be in the background, supposed to be less noticeable. And sometimes music is best when it's not noticed, and sometimes music is best when it's completely noticed. I think this is one of the cases where music, when it's supposed to be completely noticed, and yeah, it's done, it's done well.
You know it's one of those shows when Sawano Hiroyuki is involved. That's how he rolls. Like, there's no way. Like, he doesn't really do the quiet songs that much, you know? Like the ones where you don't really want to hear it, per se. Like, he's anything but quiet, so...
I can imagine him. Wait, you want me to do, like, background music? I'm out.
What is this? Yeah, you sit there. I mean, the last few shows he's done, it was like Al No Exorcist, Kill la Kill, Gundam Unicorn. Gundam Unicorn, he did actually had some nice, a few tracks, a few calm piano tracks as well, which was interesting. But, you know, generally you sit there with his crazy named songs that seemed like he was high when he was doing it. But that guy. I'll just say he is working on... Whatchamacallit? He is working on Xenoblade Chronicles X. And so that's one of those... Yeah, it's a really... It's a sequel to one of the most highly acclaimed JRPGs in the last like decade or something. But basically, it's interesting to me from his standpoint because I want to see what kind of music he can make for a game that won't just have those melodramatic moments. So I'm interested to see really how he diversifies his style for a game that's really supposed to have everything. So every type of situation.
Bringing this back, the one thing, I mean, I like many things about Elden Ring, but I guess the chief thing would be a lot of shows tend to get too serious business and throw, PTSD bullshit in there to try to be something more. But this one just seems to remember that this is a giant, you know, popcorny sci-fi romp and it's fiction supposed to be fun, and this is fun as shit. So I've enjoyed every episode.
Yeah. Actually, the one thing I wanted to talk about before we move on is, like, Passerby mentioned that, you know, a lot of this stuff is kind of Western. Like, and, you know, you sit there and, I'm starting to think back to some of the works that Gen has been involved in. Like, he's not the director here, but he penned the original idea. And you think back to some of his previous works recently, and there are clear Western references there, especially stuff like Psycho Pass. And it was, like, clear references to, like, Minority Report and, you know, quite a lot of Western films in general. Blade Runner.
That's very, very, very smart then. Because one of the one of the rules that I've learned about writing is you need to import, not recycle. And the idea being, so I write fantasy. I read some fantasy, but I also watch anime and sci-fi and horror and other stuff like that. And when I find good stuff in that, I import it into what I write. So it's not just taking the same fantasy tropes and recycling them over and over. Anime is very, very incestuous about that, both in themes and what the themes are.
Definitely. Yeah.
But if you pull things from Western movies, or you pull a Tokyo ESP and, you know, pull from comics too and other junk like that, it becomes something that most people there haven't seen, and it's more interesting. That's a good idea.
Did you ever finish Psycho Pass, Stilts?
Yeah. I still kind of hate that, but at least I don't nothing it.
at least you don't feel nothing, right?
I have a feeling about it, and it is a strong one. I despise that entire world, but Akane was okay. I like the white-haired guy, but I assume he's dead.
Makishima.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
Second season coming next season, along with Log Horizon.
Oh, Log... Oh, God, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
anyway, we're running mad long, and Stilts has got drinking to do. So, anybody got a last topic we want to go through? I know, Passerby, you got a few that we kind of did the Western influence on anime one a little bit. Want to go over either of your other topics before we call this one off?
Sure. This season of anime, I've realized recently that I've been watching anime and there was basically no good villain. I haven't had a good villain emerge in anime, like, especially when I watch Sword Art Online, because obviously they emphasize the hero very much. And one of the big deals I had with the original Sword Art Online was that the villains were very weak. And then
the villains pissed me the hell off. And
I watched Akame ga Kill, the villains are weak. And I watched Our Nova Zero, the villain is...
There's villains in that show?
Exactly.
There is, but it's not quite that a central villain kind of show.
And
Zenko
no
wrong.
Terra is not about villains. Per se,
well, for everybody.
So, throw that out. So I don't necessarily expect every show to have a villain, but those who that do, I hope to have a good villain. I've been blogging Persona 4, as you know, and recently they did a whole episode on the villain and everything.
Yeah,
and
I was surprised actually that they put that episode in so early. Like, it's not even halfway done yet.
Indeed. So that's pretty early, but at least. Persona 4, even though it's a completely niche show based on the JRPG, tries to flesh out its villains somewhat. And so I just wanted to... So the two things, I suppose, you know. Who's the best villain this season so far for you guys? And basically, what do you think about villains in general, for especially in anime?
Well, I'll interject. On the second one first, just to kind of back up what you're saying, as I look over everything else I'm watching... There aren't any great villains that I'm immediately thinking of. Now, like Mahoka, every villain they've had is crap. Most of them are
That's another problem with
straight mooks.
Main character rather than.
Yeah, but I mean, you had a rival that was good, but maybe you could say he was an antagonist, but he wasn't a villain. So, and I look over most of the others, and admittedly, I'm not watching a bunch of really ones that would have villains per se, but none of them are really good. Now, one of them that has pretty good villains. Actually, really damn good villains is Akame ga Kill.
Yeah.
And that's because damn near the whole world's a villain. But the ones that are there are deplorable and brutal, and it's a crap sack world. But
something wrong with all those guys.
Yeah, they're all messed up. But they're all, if not always the most complex villains, they are terrifying and somebody you want to see defeated and hateable.
The best part also is that they actually provide a challenge. Yes. Especially, like, Passerby, have you watched the most recent episode of Akame ga Kill?
Is that the one where spoilers happen?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, especially you look at the most recent episode, it was more than just a challenge, you know? It was like, shit actually goes down as a result. And, you know, it's that they might not be the most complex villains, but they at least provide a challenge. They provide some kind of opposite effect in comparison to the main characters. And I feel like that is definitely one of the important hallmarks a villain has to have. You know, it has to jibe against the main character, or else there's no point for them to be the villain in the first place. Like, yeah, if you're just going to get...
challenge.
Yeah, if you're just going to get tossed to the curb in like 2 seconds like Cannon Fodder, then you might as well not be a villain, you know? You wouldn't be classified a villain in the first place.
Yeah, and that point, it's why the hell are we... Why are we paying attention to you?
Yeah.
And
why then, are you here? What are you doing?
Why are you here? What are you doing? Yeah, in Akame ga Kill, they've got at least three good ones. The Minister is a friggin' terrible, terrible, I'm going to say, human being. Esteth hasn't really done anything much, but she looks fucking terrifying.
She looks like she's going to come wreck shit soon.
Yeah, Yonder Justice, definitely. Definitely.
Yo, Justice was caught me off guard.
I think from what I heard from... By the way, watch the spoilers in the comments for that one, guys. Come on. You're driving Cherry nuts. But yeah, from what I heard from a few of those, like, a lot of people started off thinking she was one thing and suspected maybe that wasn't true, but what we got was another thing entirely.
But her name is still stupid.
I have no idea. I just call her Justice.
I just call her Justice now. I'm sitting there like, yeah, she's Justice.
Justice.
I'll put
Justice
it on
Justice.
There. Yeah.
It seems to have a solo opinion on Akame ga Kill. I disagree, and I feel uncomfortable disagreeing with two people.
No,
go ahead. We'll beat you up later, but, you know, you're fine now.
We'll kick your ass later.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, yeah,
with all respect to my seniors, my senpai, I disagree. And I think there should be a difference between a villain and a monster. As far as I can tell, Akame ga Kill has been getting better at it. But a lot of the time in Akame ga Kill, we don't get villains, we have monsters. And it basically has been for a while now. Not recently, but for at least the first three, four episodes. It's been a Monster of the Week episode. Monster of the Week episodes. Basically, the people they kill are often so deplorable and such embodiments of just violence and evil that they're just monsters now. They're something which belong in a horror flick. And as the guy chasing our protagonist around and eventually and occasionally killing somebody, rather than a villain who acts as the foil to the hero.
That's true. And, I mean, even the ones that I would say are more of villains, the three that I named before, Justice, Esteth, and Minister, they're not complex at all. They're so, well, maybe Justice a little bit, but they're so deplorable, they are monsters. All of them are monsters. Even most of the heroes are monsters. But
yeah, that first episode.
Yeah, whether they're villains is... I don't know if it's starting to get into just how each of us define them.
Could be.
But, I mean, some their motives are so cartoonishly evil at points that they really do maybe step over the line and just become just beasts more than thinking, if not feeling, human beings.
At some point, the minister is going to twirl his mustache or something. I know.
I will crack up laughing so much.
Someone will twirl his mustache for him.
But Stilts also mentioned about the crapsack world and the world being a villain. And I actually, when I watched Akame ga Kill, I was expecting kind of this dystopian fiction, but it turned out not to be at all. Like, I know it has the trappings of dystopia. Like, it's supposed to be a crapsack world. It's all horrible. It's all very corrupt. And everyone's very evil, but it doesn't have the same kind of intent as most dystopian fiction has. Because in dystopian fiction, especially when you want the world to be the villain, you need to have a sense of oppression. Heroes so far have not been feeling very oppressed. They've mostly been just fighting and killing people. They have never been really oppressed. Eventually, once in a while, someone dies or gets crucified, and someone goes, "Oh, look how horrible our world is," just to remind us that this is a bad world. But most of the time, it's not. And the second thing about dystopian fiction is, as part of the oppression regime, is that morality also has to be very gray. Because if you can fight against the world and can think of yourself as a good guy and, you know, and root for the hero to win, that's not very oppressive. In Kakame Got Killed, the main characters are always very much, oh, yeah, we are assassins, we kill people, but look at how evil these people are. Yeah, we're killing them. No one's going to miss them. And it's still very quite kind of black and white. And that's the problem, having everyone so cartoonish to evil, because it remains black and white. Because the heroes are always going to look so much better than these other guys. That way, you go, that when they kill, if and when they eventually kill the minister, no one's going to miss him. And no one's going to think, oh, is that the right thing to do? And so, yeah, so it's not very dystopian. And the world itself is, I think, too cartoonishly evil to be the kind of dystopian villain I was hoping for, which is not exactly wrong, but it's not what I expected.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I mean, you're right. It's not dystopian per se. I think what it is... So there's a reason that zombie fiction is so popular. It's because you can kill zombies and nobody gives a shit. It's the same thing you can do for some types of monsters and other stuff like that. This is just the point where they're making everybody so evil and everything so black and everything so dark that nobody cares if they get slaughtered, so you can get lost in the violence of it. That's why the world is like that. It's not, and you're right, the heroes aren't oppressed at all. They're too powerful for it. They've always been too powerful. Even Tatsumi, who doesn't have Imperial arms, he's powerful as shit. So he never is, they would get that feeling of oppression.
He just chops people in half.
Yeah, it's just because it's a playground for the less bad villains that are the heroes to go around killing people, and everybody'd be okay with it because everything is so bad and everybody's so evil.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those shows where it kind of seems to be dystopian in ways, but yeah, I don't think the actual intent is for it to actually be a dystopia per se. It has some of the elements, and I mean, it rolls with it in the story it wants to tell.
The world sort of is, but the intent of the story is not.
I really can't understand. I can see where Akami Got Killed is strong, I suppose. Like, I'm like kind of like Stilts in the first season of Sword Art Online. He wanted Log Horizon, I suppose.
Mm.
What I wanted was more Darker Than Black.
Okay, that makes sense.
I actually walked in thinking, oh, yeah, is this Darker Than Black? And then it was like, no, it wasn't. Darker Than Black is an incredibly violent show. Like, the fights are brutal.
Especially second season.
Yeah. People drop dead all the time with no fanfare. It's violent in a different way than a comic kill, which revels in killing people in very bloody ways. But in Darker Than Black, they kill people in very, without caring much about anything. People just die very quickly, very violently. And Darker Than Black was also about a dark world with a haven for violence. But that was also very dystopian in its own way. And so I guess I was kind of looking for that in Akame Ga Kill when it wasn't what it was trying to do, which is, I suppose, a failing on my part. And
it's actually understandable. Like, I think, and Enzo and I talked about this at one point, but you can come into trouble as a story when you don't paint yourself accurately as what you are. And some of that is, and I don't think Akame Did Kill did a bad job with it, but it's understandable that you go in thinking it would be a dystopian story. So that's something you do have to calibrate for it, but the ones that really screw the pooch and say that they're one thing and another, Sword Art Online being the most recent example, that's their fault. I mean, Sword Art Online, we go in thinking it would be Log Horizon, understandably so it wasn't. People get pissed, understandable. This one, yeah, I think you really just got to calibrate to what it is and then decide if Uber killing violence orgy is something that you're fine with.
Yeah, and in the end, it's all about the expectations that the show itself gives off and the premise and the preview materials gives, and really the expectations you have for it yourself. It's a fine line between the two. And
I would like to interject real quick and say that I said Uber violence killing orgy is okay, and none of us bat an eyelash.
It's
a weird
okay.
conversation, guys.
It's
fine.
It's
you know, if you're okay with that.
Nobody is going to take you out of context. It'll be fine.
Probably not. It's okay. I can't run for public office anymore. I screwed that up a while ago. But yeah. Okay. Any more thoughts on this or anything else?
Yeah, actually, I wanted to go back real quick to Passerby. He was talking about how monsters versus villains. Like, I wanted to just say that. Yeah, you know what? It is a legitimate distinction. I understand what you're trying to say there. I feel personally that, you know, monsters can be, like, even people in a comic a kill who are twisted in such a way that they're essentially monsters. I feel like they can be considered villains in my view. In the end, it kind of goes down to what your definition of villains are. And, you know, just to go all the way back to your original thing of any good villains in shows this season in general.
Oh, yeah.
I think another one that has villains that I like, that I feel like are at least good in the context that they're good antagonists to the main cast. They're not necessarily the most complex. It's similar to a Gamma Kill in ways, but, you know, they're not so much monsters because they're actually humans with, you know, some of them might have been bribed to do certain
things. Get to the point. Who are we talking about here? Come on.
but, you know, I'm talking about JoJo's Bizarre Adventures, Stardust Crusaders, right? And, you know, pretty much the basic premise is they're going around from Japan to Egypt, and, you know, in the middle, I got the big villain, the big giant villain. There's spoilers here, but so I won't actually say who he is, but he sends all these henchmen there, and, you know, every few episodes, our main cast will encounter them. And, you know, they're really good villains in the context that they provide a really good challenge to the main cast. Shit goes down. It's not always easy. People get hurt, and it's a lot of seeing how the main cast will actually get through each obstacle from week to week. So I feel like that was a show with what I'd consider decent to good villains. They're not like the masterful villains like, say, Psycho Pass's Makishima or something. But, you know, I feel like in the context of providing good challenge, it fulfills the definition there. But aside from that, I'm sitting here, I'm looking over my list right now. It's like, I'm
Tokyo SB, that one's okay. It's the anime is not being done particularly well, but, and they're actually terrorists that are doing.
Yeah, I still gotta watch
for terror reasons. Well, they're actually like terror wanting terrorists, but or at least they know how to use they know how to use imagery and stories. But not the strongest season for villains, I admit.
Yeah. But I mean, this season also is. It feels like there's a lot more shows of the variety that doesn't necessarily have villains per se. You know, like
True. There's
a lot of comedy shows there. I mean, obviously there wouldn't be an actual villain that we'd be looking for in those.
I'm looking down my list. Free, Magi Mojo.
Yeah, stuff like Free, Diamond No Ace. I mean, you wouldn't consider actual villains there. Alhara Ride. You know, it's a romance. You know, you don't sit there looking for villains per se.
Snidely Whiplash isn't gonna walk in on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of mecha shows too. I mean,
I was thinking of the twirling mustache thing from earlier. I was like, who is that one guy? Dudley Do-Right's villain. Gotta look it up. Sorry. Go on.
Yeah, but that's about it, really. I mean, I'm sitting there, like, I'm looking for my list now. It's like, I'm current on, like, 27 airing shows right now.
God, thank you so much.
Nothing really comes to mind. But, I mean, it's also not necessarily the best season for looking for good villains.
No. But anyway, we've gone a little long here, and I've got to leave in 5 minutes. So, any last thoughts about anything? Dirty jokes? Shout-outs, I guess, that we always forget to do those?
I think the last thing to end this with is I think this season's actually been pretty interesting in terms of the kind of shows we're seeing. I haven't laughed as much in a while, so
there are some good comedies.
Yeah,
it's true.
Gekkan
Shoujo is still the only show I watch immediately when it airs.
Oh yeah,
for reasons I don't know.
It's always kind of hard for me to know if something I'm blogging whether I would watch it immediately, but I do know I would watch that one immediately. It's just. Nicorine. Alrighty, in that case, thank you everyone for listening to the Random Curiosity Anime Podcast once again. Until next time, you stay classy, Random C.